Time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt joining us here in studio. We talked a couple of times about the book Escape from Castro's Cuba, and then a couple of weeks ago had a terrific visit with the author of the book, Tim Wendell, who was a great guest and a really interesting guy, a well-respected baseball writer and novelist as well. The baseball scenes were so vivid and so real in Escape from Castro's Cuba. His knowledge of Cuba, obviously immense. And then we decided to go back and read, the first book. Which the predecessor to Escape from Castro's Cuba is called Castro's Curveball. And man, what a wonderful read that was.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think it just ties in with so many of the books that we read in the past about The Pitcher and the Dictator, Trujillo and Satchel Paige and those great teams. The other great Cuban and Latin American or Caribbean teams that were composed over the years of players that would never have otherwise played together. So taking that and remembering that, yes, indeed, there was a Cuban league made up of many of the players were from the U.S. In the 1950s. And then imagining all that myth about how good a player was Castro. I mean, I can remember Louis Tion's father weighing in on it saying, hey, he was a pretty good pitcher. Other people saying he was a pretty good pitcher. Some people saying, nah, he wasn't as good as he thought. So what Wendell did is create a cast of characters who go to Cuba to play play winter ball. Billy Bryan being the main guy, and his buddy Cochran, and he puts them in a the way the games were played. They didn't play every day, and there were 4 to 6 teams on the island that competed for the championship. And I don't know that they were limited to a certain amount of American players, but they may have been. I never really could figure that quite out. But a lot of these guys were either hanging on, trying to make a name for themselves, needed the money in the off season. They didn't want to work on the delivery dock, so they tried to play some baseball. In this game, in this book, we learn that Fidel Castro, a young law student at the time, comes down with a lot of people to watch a baseball game and goes out on the field and grabs the ball and pitches. And Billy Bryan, who's the catcher, says, you know, okay, let's go along with it. It's easier than to fight it. And he strikes out a major leaguer, and he has the best hook that they've ever seen, which encourages, and he talks him up. Bryan talks him up and says, you know, this kid's really got it. I've never seen a better curveball than that. It's unbelievable. His fastball is nothing, but we can work on that. And the legend grows, and then scouts for the Detroit team and the Washington team and other teams are down there looking for people, and they try and sign Castro. The problem is Castro's trying to play baseball and start a revolution.
Yep.
In between that, we have the wonderful, beautiful Malena Fonseca, the photographer of the revolution, if you will, or of the period of time, who becomes involved with Billy, may have once been involved with Castro. We don't know. We can't tell.
And I love that's very ambiguous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much mystery in it. I'm not going to blow the plot, because the plot is, I agree with George Saunders and Colin Fleming. I don't like the word plot, the meaningful action. I'm not going to tell you the meaningful action. But the attempt to sign Castro takes the story a lot of places you don't expect it to go.
Right, including Castro's demand that Billy be his essentially personal pitching coach.
His personal pitching coach. Castro wants to get to the America so he can study at a university like Columbia, which is safer than what's going on in Cuba. Now, at the time, people need to remember that Fulgencio Batista was more than once the dictator of Cuba. There were times when he had to disappear for a while, but he would come back. He was a brutal, bad guy. But by the same token, he encouraged what was going on in Cuba, which was tons of Yankee money. It was the party ground of the rich. It wasn't just Hemingway. It was, you know, actors and professional athletes, the casinos, the brothels. It was a 24-hour debauch if you had money.
Right.
Unfortunately, 95% of the Cubans didn't have that money. They were living in the countryside, and unrest continued to grow as they saw all this wealth
Right. And when it would go to the casinos, you would see very few natives. It was largely rich Americans.
Yeah, and the natives who were there, the native Cubans who were there, were either performers or waiting on tables or whatever. So the ball players were able, the American ball players fit into that world. So they were always going out to the casinos, and they were stars. They didn't have to pay the bill half the time. But at the same time, there are all these shady characters that are keeping track of everybody. And it's the alliances that they have formed are not clear till the end of the book.
Right.
And that, which was also really intriguing. But the thing I loved, and you're so right, the baseball was so real. It was...
including the way the players talk with each other.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I really liked that in the way that Skipper, the nervous pitcher, young pitcher, that they'd have to come out and tell him, look, if you're going to throw the ball straight over the plate, someone's going to bean you in the next inning, right? And the overall effect is that you're drawn into the period, you're drawn into the time, and you come away wondering, what if Castro had had that great a curveball? What if he'd decided to play Major League Baseball? What if he'd come and decided that he was going to move to Miami to get away from Batista and make a lot of money and live the life of a ball player? What would have been different in all of Latin America? A lot. Or would Che have just taken over, or would someone else have taken over? Mm. What is the whole myth about sports and baseball and the way that baseball is the Cuban national game? And as Tim Wendell said, they've been playing as long as we have. It's the sport. I mean, obviously track and field and boxing have been big in Cuba at different times, but that's baseball is an unbelievable part of their culture.
And I love the explanation of that too, that the Spanish wanted bullfighting.
Yeah.
But the people on the island opted for baseball instead.
They liked baseball better. And I think, you know, Tim telling us that story when he was on about describing the Minnesota Twins to the fellow who said, you know, what are the Twins? And he said, no, tell me about them. And he goes, well, there's Herbeck at first base. And he looks at the guy's crying, because baseball for Cubans was either something they could see played in their little town on any kind of a field, or something they could only hear on the radio. And they were, yes, they could hear it in Spanish if they could get the Mexican stations.
Right.
They couldn't, because they weren't broadcasting Major League Baseball on Cuban stations, right? So that whole thing of Castro then becoming dictator and making the players stay there and making them play only in Cuba and not letting guys out, you know, is sort of a really interesting thing to consider when you consider the possibility if he might have been one of the ones that wanted to get out before
that. And you also see in his interaction with Billy, you see the charisma that also contributed to his ability to lead a revolution.
Yes, you see that, and then you see in Milena that she starts seeing where this is going, and she doesn't like it. And she's seeing that Castro has certain traits about him that, in her mind, he won't be the guy to lead the revolution. But, as you say, he's got the charisma, and he got the people, and he spoke the language of the peasants, even though he himself was not. Right. He was fairly well off as a young man. But Castro's curveball. I mean, it's. I like something that takes a small idea like that, and then thinks it through. What if Castro had played baseball instead of becoming a dictator? You know, I mean, that's a huge thing. What if an untalented businessman decided not to run for president? You know, you start to take those things and think them through, and the world really can change on a dime. You know, with someone's fortune, one way or the other. You know, the bullet is a quarter inch closer to Reagan, and he's dead, right? You know, I mean, all these things, these little moments that at the time, well, with an assassination attempt at the time, you know that, but there's other things you just, you know, you don't know.
And I don't know, but it would seem to me that Tim's work as a baseball writer makes him, I think, even more adept at telling this story, and not because of the baseball knowledge, but because of the style of writing.
Yes,
it's fast paced. It gets you where you're going. There's an economy of words.
There is. There's an economy of words. There are no big words that aren't necessary. There's no florid prose in it, and it 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 has that sense that it keeps the sport in it all the time. Mm. But you keep forgetting it's about baseball.
Yes.
Even though it's ever present, and I think that's a real nod. I thought that there are certain, like The Good Body by Bill Gaston does that for hockey. There are certain novels that do that. Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk does football. But I think of all the baseball books I've read recently, and Lord knows I've read more books on baseball fiction than probably anything else. These really captured my imagination because he recreated something that, you know, I was 9 years old in 1960. So I sort of remember Castro and pictures of him and the like, but I don't remember a lot about it. But, you know, I'm thinking of someone who's 80 years old reading these books, or someone who's never, ever heard of this period of history reading them, that it's accessible for all those people. Yeah. And that's a sign of a really good book.
Well, and you had to know it was going to be pretty good when it's blurbed by our friend Ken Burns, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, and Frank DeFord.
Another friend of downtown.
And, it got a starred Kirkus review. That doesn't happen to just any book. But I thought what DeFord said, there was something DeFord said.
It's right on the back.
Yeah, a Cuba Libre mixed with Baseball Revolution and Moonlight, wonderfully evocative of a time that was and a picture that might have been. That's DeFord was great. But I really thought he really, really hit that on the head. The moonlight, the Cuban nights, the heat, the breakwaters, the Malecón and everything. I mean, I'm thinking, yeah, I want to go to Havana. I really do.
Well, read both books, Castro's Curveball and then Escape from Castro's Cuba from Tim Wendell. And Tim will be back with us in early July.
July 7th, I think, is that Wednesday. Yeah, he'll be back with us, and he was pretty excited about that. So
excellent. Glad to see him. And Bruce, you'll be back here in studio with us next week.
Yes, to talk about a very moving book called The Best Team Over There, The Untold Story of Grover Cleveland Alexander and the Great War by Jim Leake, who wrote From the Dugout to the Trenches, which we talked about in the past. There's... this book will, as somebody said, one of the blurbs said, it'll make you very, very proud, and it'll make you cry. There are moments near the end of this book where my heart was just breaking. It's a remarkable story about a man who, had he not served in World War I, might have gone on to win 400 games, his troubles and the like. And it's really amazing. It's also a military history at the same time. It's very, very well written.
Well, we'll look forward to that next week. And what else in the weeks ahead?
We'll have Jim Leake on. I'm reading the 1962 book about Kennedy and baseball. We may do one on women in the WWE just to break up baseball. But books just keep arriving. So I'm trying to find the ones I have time to read between the next time we have something on. But we'll always have something.
Look forward to that. Every Wednesday, Sports Lit 101 here on Downtown.